This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
This is Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Every week, speaker, consultant Mark Amtower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. Amtower Off-Center with your host, Mark Amtower.
Welcome to our no-holds-barred forum for discussing what's good, bad, ugly, and just plain silly in the arena of doing business with the government. I'm Mark Amtower. My guest today is a frequent guest, Larry Allen of Allen Federal. You can find Larry at allenfederal.com, and I suggest you do so. Larry, welcome to the show.
Mark, great to be back here. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, well, a couple of things. We're recording this on the 7th, or is it the 8th? I don't know.
It's 7th.
7th, there you go. I don't wear a watch, and I don't look at a calendar. but I did make it to the station on the right day. Anyway, we're recording this on the 7th. You're going to a hearing today. You're testifying at a hearing today. Give us a little background about this, please.
Well, Mark, it's a House Small Business Subcommittee hearing, Education and Workforce Acquisition Subcommittee, where the subject is GSA schedules particularly and its treatment of small business. It's essentially an issues and opportunities oversight hearing, Mark, where the subcommittee is asking people to come and talk about a couple things. One, of course, when you're talking about GSA and small businesses, you're talking about the Federal Strategic Sourcing Initiative for office supplies. So that's a definite issue that a number of people are going to address. So I'm going to talk about it a little bit. The big thing that GSA is doing right now is they're talking about closing off schedules or parts of schedules, which the small business subcommittee people are very concerned about in terms of its effect on small businesses and their ability to get on contract. They're also talking about kicking off businesses that have recorded zero sales. And I think that issue, Mark, is one that bears a little digging into, because I think there's a strong argument to be made on the one hand for GSA being able to manage its program effectively so that if you don't have any sales, then, you know, you shouldn't necessarily always have a contract. On the other hand,
you mean sales on the entire schedule, sales as a company?
Sales on the entire schedule. On the other hand, GSA has set itself up, perhaps unwittingly, but nevertheless effectively, as a auxiliary arm of many state and local government contracting offices. So you have the phenomenon where a number of businesses, again, especially small businesses, that obtain a scheduled contract because they've been told by the state government that they're doing business with that that's an easy way for them to get a state contract. So while they may not be doing federal sales, they may be selling extensively, say, to the state of Texas, and therefore canceling the underlying GSA contract would cause that small business and perhaps the state of Texas some distress. So that's an issue that has to be looked into, and I'm going to be talking about that in my testimony today.
How many schedules now are open to state and local governments?
Well, I believe it's still just two schedules that are open full-time under the Cooperative Purchasing Program, the Information Technology Schedule, IT-70, and the Law Enforcement Schedule, Schedule 84. There are other programs or other contracts that are open to state and local governments under things like the Drug Interdiction Program, which is parts of other schedules like the 36 schedule for office equipment, copiers, things of that nature. But then all schedules are open to state and local government for things like disaster preparedness and disaster response. Congress had been moving earlier this year, Mark, to maybe expand cooperative purchasing to all schedules. That legislation's gotten bogged down as other priorities have come up. So we're still at that status quo where it's a little confusing if you're a contractor and I would say a state or local government buyer. because under certain circumstances you can buy directly through the schedule, and under certain circumstances you can't.
Okay. So this is huge for small business.
Right. Well, I think it's a very big issue for small businesses, and in fact, that's one of the reasons why the Small Business Subcommittee on Workforce and Acquisition is having the hearing today, because they've heard from small businesses that don't want to lose their schedule contract, because the schedule contract means good state and local government business for them, and some of them actually do want to have the ability to sell to the federal government. They just haven't been focused on that. They've been focused on their prime customer. That doesn't mean they don't want to sell to the feds, just that they're a small business. They can't be everywhere at once.
Right.
Similarly, I think generally whether you're a small business or a large business, it doesn't make good business sense for GSA as an agency to close off part of its schedules program, either an entire schedule at a time or a subsection of a schedule. You and I know those as special item numbers, mm-hmm. because GSA finds itself in a very competitive marketplace. The schedules program, as we know, Mark, is a big program, $40 billion a year, more than that if you include VA schedule sales. And yet, there are a number of other vehicles in the government that compete with the schedules. You have a number of GWAC and multiple award contracts in the information technology and increasing the professional services area. Mm-hmm. You also have other agencies that today shall go unnamed, but they know who they are, that want to set up their own schedules program because they're concerned that the GSA program doesn't meet their needs sufficiently. Hey, the best way for GSA to encourage people not to use its program is to make it more difficult for customers to use their program.
And make it less attractive,
right.
You know, when things like FSSI kick in. which schedules or which SINs are they, do we know, which they're trying to eliminate?
Well, my understanding, Mark, is that GSA would take a look at rotating closures of most of its schedules, with the possible exception of the IT schedule, for a workload issue. Right now, you have contracts that may sit for a year, sometimes more than a year, before they're awarded by GSA. There's a heavy backlog of contracting work to be done and not enough contracting officers to do it. But I don't think that the best way to manage your marquee program is to close parts of the program just because of a workload issue. You find a way to dedicate the resources you need to dedicate in order to keep your marquee program up and running, like the Department of Defense saying, well, you know, we're not going to commit the Army to further engagements in Afghanistan because we have other issues going on inside DOD where we need to, I don't know, go out and train and educate high school students in ROTC. Well, you know, that's important. ROTC is important, but Afghanistan is kind of the primary mission. Same thing in GSA. You don't want to tell somebody that they're closing off your marquee program that funds an awful lot of what your agency does without congressional appropriations, unless you absolutely have to. And I don't think that GSA absolutely has to. They can divert resources, or should have the ability to divert resources from less essential programs, things like global supply, things like assisted acquisition services, things that are nice to do, but things that aren't the core mission of negotiating and awarding and managing contracts.
Okay. were any of these issues discussed at Expo this year?
The number one issue that was discussed at Expo by
lack of attendance,
other than lack of attendance, which was the primary one, was ethics. And there was a heavy dose on ethics earlier, about a month ago now, GSA Expo in May. It would have been difficult to escape the message that you can't buy a contracting officer a drink, the contracting officer can't take a drink, they can't take lunch. I think everybody kind of understood the ethics message loud and clear.
Interest. Is this all predicated on PBS's Vegas?
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. Interestingly, though, Mark, even though GSA has had the plans to close schedules or parts of schedules down since at least January of this year, there was really no mention of that at Expo. I guess that would have just been adding too much insult to injury to the contractors that turned out only to have the contractor turnout be slightly higher than the federal turnout.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Back after these messages.
Arming your home with a security system gives you peace of mind. Now get peace of mind for your wallet. Ackerman Security will monitor your system for $18.95 a month.
I was paying too much for monitoring, so I made the switch to Ackerman Security's Certified Monitoring Center. Now I'm paying only $18.95 a month with no cost to switch.
Call today and get 2 months of Ackerman's award-winning basic monitoring free. 888-999-1070, AckermanSecurity.com.
Hey, man, what's that?
It's my new Pioneer DEH44 HD radio car receiver that I just got from Walmart for $120.
HD radio? What's that?
It's your extra local HD to HD3 FM stations, but you need an HD radio receiver.
So I just need to buy an HD radio receiver?
Yeah, just visit HDradio.com for all the info. Then go to Walmart to buy your Pioneer DEH44 HD radio receiver for only $120.
Okay, HDradio.com, then to Walmart.
HD radio, more radio, more value.
At Kaiser Permanente, we carefully select our doctors so you can carefully select your doctors. Our hiring process is so selective, only 1 in 10 doctors who apply make the cut. Yes, we're uber picky. Probably have a little perfectionism complex in there, but by putting our doctors under the microscope, we've discovered some of the greatest medical minds in their fields, and that's led to an even greater medical breakthrough. Drumroll, please. Award-winning care. We've received many of the highest possible rankings in member satisfaction, patient safety, overall quality of care, and more. But we're not the only ones reaping the rewards. Because we carefully select our doctors, you have great doctors to choose from. And with all those great doctors, you think it'd be easy. But try choosing just one for your primary care doctor. We'll let you create your own highly selective process for that. We're Kaiser Permanente, and we're here to help you thrive. Visit us at kp.org.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
Staying focused on your mission requires making smart decisions and mitigating unnecessary risks. That's why many agencies turn to GSA. With unparalleled experience in acquisition and financial compliance and technical expertise, GSA makes it easy for federal civilian and military customers to maintain mission focus and enhance program performance by adding value. With trained professionals in contracting, financial, and program management, GSA stands ready to help execute large-scale and/or complex and/or sensitive IT and professional services projects while maintaining seamless compliance with today's tough mandates. With GSA, you gain a trusted partner to ensure delivery promises are kept on time, on budget, and at best value. To learn how GSA can help, call 703-605-3699. That's 703-605-3699. Or visit gsa.gov/AAS. That's gsa.gov/AAS. GSA, providing custom solutions to your complex requirements.
Accenture. High performance delivered. It's how we help clients take on their most complex challenges. We consolidated more than 100 defense financial systems into one, and we helped eliminate $348 million in U.S. federal fleet, inventory, and freight costs. As a partner with both defense and industry knowledge, Accenture is uniquely equipped to help you accomplish your missions. Accenture, high performance delivered. To learn more, visit accenture.com/federal.
The CIO Council's recently released digital government strategy goes beyond mobile technology to rethink the way federal agencies manage information and interact with citizens. The shared platform approach not only addresses data, application, and device management, but also how to mitigate the threat of security breaches. Join AFSEA Bethesda on June 20th at the Bethesda North Marriott for a discussion about how agencies transform this policy into action. Register at afseabethesda.org/junebreakfast.
Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guest today is Larry Allen. You can find Larry at allenfederal.com. I suggest you do so for the simple reason that we're going to discuss several items from his newsletter that comes out Monday the week ahead. If you do not subscribe to this, it's a quick read Monday morning. I suggest you get it. It's always got really, really good stuff. You can find it at allenfederal.com. Larry, lead story. Go.
The lead story we had from this past week, Mark, was the GSA Inspector General report. This is part of their semi-annual report that they present to Congress twice a year. And this report contained in it some things that I thought were interesting, one of which was the finding that the GSA schedule's price reductions clause was perhaps not as effective as the IG would like it to be. And in fact, one media outlet characterized the GSA IG's comments as the price reductions clause being ineffective. And that's quite a dramatic statement, because really the only organization in town that wants to keep the schedule's price reductions clause has been the GSA and perhaps the VA, Office of the Inspector General. Everyone else, Mark, kind of understands that the price reductions clause now is an anachronism and really doesn't drive any pricing discipline or competitiveness on schedule. In fact, that's exactly what the IG report found, said that the price reductions clause is not the mechanism that's primarily responsible for keeping prices on schedules reasonable. Well, you know, I've only been saying that, Mark, for about the past 20 years. It is competition between and among schedule contractors that keeps prices fair and reasonable. Today, we have technology that gives us an amazingly transparent federal marketplace so that really competitors know what each other are doing in real time. Mm-hmm. And so too can buyers understand what competitors in a given marketplace are doing in real time, so that there's better opportunity now, given the market tools available, to ensure price reasonableness. A contract clause for compliance like the price reductions clause, therefore, has very much outlived its usefulness. And keeping it, I think, only really serves as a trap to even the most well-meaning company that has a very difficult time complying with the price reductions clause in a global transparent marketplace where pricing can be extremely fluid. And yet the IG has always hung to the belief that they have to have the clause in order to make sure that contractors aren't overcharging the government. Well, I think now with this semi-annual report, any fig leaf that may have remained on that argument, Mark, has now been removed.
Okay.
And it's now time for us to have a serious adult conversation about updating the schedule contract clauses, including the price reductions clause, to reflect the market reality today in what soon will be fiscal year 2013.
Way too soon for a lot of people, considering what else is coming down the pike. The next item that you discussed is sort of directly related here.
Well, I try to have really good news in my newsletter on Mondays because, you know, it's a Monday and you're in government contracting. You need a little lift. And yet sometimes, Mark, it's challenging to put good news in the newsletter these days. And the second article, shrinking levels of federal employment spell concern and opportunity for contractors, is an example of that. And this article highlights a report by the Federal Bureau of Labor Statistics that showed that in the month of May, there was a decline of some 5,000 federal jobs. In federal speak, it's full-time equivalent, or FTE. And the May decline of 5,000 FTE came on the heels of 2,000 person decline announced in April. So just over 2 months, you have announced a 7,000 decline in people who are working in the federal government. This is definitely part of a trend, Mark. We started to see agencies asking the Office of Personnel Management for buyout and layoff authority well over a year ago. In fact, federalnewsradio.com maintains a list of federal agencies that have requested OPM approval for layoffs or buyouts. You can find that on federalnewsradio.com. And they can.
Thanks for the plug.
Absolutely. And you will see that there are literally thousands of jobs that are in play here. If you're a contractor, it's a mixed message. It depends on what type of contractor you are. If you're a supplier of products and supplies, having fewer fannies in seats and having fewer seats overall in the federal government is a sobering statistic for you, because there is going to be less need for things like copier paper, toner cartridges, office furniture, the whole host of supplies that go into supporting any office-based operation. If there are fewer people and a tighter budget overall, which there is, this is a tough time to be a product supplier in the federal marketplace, particularly if you don't have a socioeconomic designation or pre-existing contract like a GSA schedule or another.
And hope that it doesn't close.
Exactly right. Or another similar contract. If you're a services provider, however, having fewer people in the government market may be an opportunity for you, depending on what type of services you provide. For example, nobody, Mark, is talking about reducing the missions that federal agencies have to fulfill. Congress is not in the business right now of telling federal agencies to do less.
Right.
And as a constituency writ large, people are expecting their government to do certain things for them, and that takes people to do them. If they're not federal employees, then they're going to have to be contract employees that perform those services, things that may have previously been done by a federal agency that aren't, I would hasten to add, core government services, but things that support those core government services. So if you're a contractor that's providing professional support services, and you are able to provide mission-critical support in the form of specialized personnel, having the federal workforce go down in size may just spell opportunity for you. So it really kind of does depend where you are. And it reflects the shift on a couple of levels, Mark, that's happening elsewhere. First of all, the government is now a net buyer of services, as is the commercial marketplace. So if you're looking for opportunities in the future and expansion in the future, you know, the writing is pretty clear. You want to get in the services game on some level. The other is, this is all indicative of tightening federal belt lines and the fact that there are going to be fewer discretionary dollars to spend in the government market ahead.
Okay. There was a couple of stories that I pulled up that we shared that kind of tie into these things. The first is the congressional report, and I pulled this. I think Jolie Lee here at Federal News Radio wrote it. So if you do just go to the homepage right now, you might be able to find it. But it indicates that there's about $70 billion of unspent money laying around, probably in you know, the third drawer of a desk. And,
But right.
What does this mean?
Well, I think generally it means, Mark, that there are way too many regulations attendant to the expenditure of federal dollars. And this report that you're referring to, I've seen it myself, and it talks about both procurement-related dollars and federal grant dollars. And while you and I talk a lot about federal procurement dollars and the federal procurement environment, there are at least as many, if not more, rules that surround the expenditure of federal grant money that make even the best intended circumstances difficult to realize. And I think that's what we're seeing here. I mean, the report talks about grant money that's supposed to go to federal agencies and state and local governments for things like disaster cleanup still related to Hurricane Katrina, which was several years ago. There is money that is supposed to go in the form of tax breaks to New York City. The Department of Energy has a $30 million reserve for to prevent the proliferation of weapons of mass destruction. All of these things are important, and they were money, ironically, in a very tight budget time that Congress appropriated for needs that it perceived to be real and pressing. And yet, on the back end, you basically, in some cases, have to be a one-legged, one-eyed mongoose from the Lower East Side in order to qualify to obtain this money.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Hold that thought. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Back after these messages.
What is the strategic direction for the United States Coast Guard? How will steadying the service make the U.S. Coast Guard ready for today and prepared for tomorrow? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these questions and many others with Admiral Robert Papp, Commandant of the United States Coast Guard. That's next week on the Business of Government Hour.
The Federal Drive is sponsored by Learning Tree International.
Learning Tree International is the number one provider of IT classroom training to the federal government. They provide high-quality instructor-led IT and management training to government professionals and contractors at all levels. Call 1-800-THE-TREE or enroll today at learningtree.com/gov. That's learningtree.com/gov.
The Federal Drive, brought to you by Learning Tree International, airs weekday mornings from 6 to 10 and online at federalnewsradio.com.
Hey, Jamie, who sings that song? Whoa, piece of bread.
That can't possibly be a real song.
No, it is. We heard it on the car radio this morning.
Matt, we really need to get HD radio so you can hear song lyrics better. Actually, we should get a Kia Sorento with the Yuvo infotainment system and HD radio. This way you can hear all your corny lyrics with crystal clear digital sound quality, and I can listen to good music on all the extra FM HD2 and HD3 stations it offers. Now sing that song again to me.
Whoa.
Voice-activated Yuvo infotainment system with HD radio. Now available in the Kia Sorento.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power, MetLife, and Grantham University. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m. right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
At the Jeep brand, we've been on active duty for over 70 years, in conditions you can imagine and some you can't. And like our soldiers, we never shy away from a challenge. So we'd like to honor our Armed Forces outstanding service during the Jeep military event. Get $500 military bonus cash toward a new 2012 Jeep vehicle. After so much time and service to others, we're giving our soldiers the recognition they deserve. Jeep.
Hurry into your local Jeep dealer or visit Jeep.com for this special military offer, along with other great incentives on the full line of legendary Jeep vehicles. Offer available to active military and military reserve and a retired military and military reserve with honorable discharge and 20 years of service within 6 months of discharge date on a retail purchase or lease. Excludes SRT models. See dealer for details. Jeep is a registered trademark of Chrysler Group, LLC.
Pooling together really rewards. Van pools have now been added to the popular Pool Rewards program. If you currently drive alone to work and can carpool at least 2 days a week or form a new van pool, you may qualify for a cash incentive or reduce commuting costs. Visit CommuterConnections.org. Click on Pool Rewards to find out more. Need to find others to rideshare with? Commuter Connections provides free ride matching services too. Pool Rewards. It pays to rideshare. Some restrictions apply. Visit CommuterConnections.org today to get started.
You hate to see the real thing at the beach, but if a Virginia Tech engineer has his way, swarms of robotic jellyfish might one day keep watch over the oceans. A jellyfish is resilient, thriving in most of the world's oceans at a variety of depths.
And it's able to move very efficiently.
Shashank Priya, a Virginia Tech engineer, says those properties would make a robotic jellyfish ideal for uses ranging from military surveillance to monitoring ocean health, and
it will be sustainable vehicle. It generates its own power to do all the decision-making operation, all the propulsion systems, and all the sensing.
Priya says power could come from solar energy or, for operations in deeper water, seafood. Yes, he's even trying to mimic the jellyfish eating process. To find out more about this and other engineering innovation stories, please go to www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm here with Larry Allen. Pick up right where you left off, please, on this $70 billion laying around.
Well, this is a report that came out from the office of Senator Tom Coburn from Oklahoma that talked about $70 billion, as you said, Mark, probably lying in the third drawer somewhere of a number of government agencies, unspent dollars that could have helped in disaster relief, highway construction, education, a whole host of priority items that Congress and even the administration probably agree need to be spent. But there are no good mechanisms to getting that money into the hands of people that want to spend it. Talking about right before the break that you have to be, in some cases, a very specialized type of person or organization in order to qualify, especially for grant money. But even in the world of government procurement, there are rules and regulations that talk about business planning, acquisition planning, making sure that you're getting the very best value for the government, making sure that you have the right cooperation in cases where it's necessary between the federal government and either a state or local government customer that may be the end user of these funds. And it's therefore not just the federal spending procurement rules that come into play. It's the spending rules that, say, New York City or the state of New York might have. Shockingly, Mark, those rules and regulations between the federal and state governments don't always match up. So you have a couple of layers of bureaucracy that come into play here. All of this is a long way of saying that it is well past time for those of us in the federal procurement community to take a serious look at the growth of rules and regulations that have come about since the mid-90s, our heyday, Mark, the days of the Federal Acquisition Streamlining Act, the days of Clinger-Cohen, when we took a real look at setting up a preference for the first time for the acquisition of commercial items. Since that time, intent and ability to conduct streamlined acquisitions has been hampered with a whole ream full of new reporting requirements, things on executive compensation, things that are not tied in any way to government contracts. What are your performance standards on tax law and labor law, for example? Particularly, this administration has been very activist in terms of putting new rules and regulations on government contractors in terms of their labor practices. So we need to look again at what we have overburdened the system with in terms of rules and regulations that prevent money that Congress and the administration want to get into the marketplace. I mean, $70 billion getting into today's market would really be a nice little stimulus that wouldn't require the allocation of any new dollars. These are dollars that have already been allocated. So a nice little election year gift would be able to get this $70 billion into the economy. And yet it's the government's own rules that are preventing this from happening.
Right. And you know, to kind of adjunct to that, we also have the election year gift to ourselves, if you're a member of Congress, where you have, what, 14 competing small business pieces of legislation or proposals out there, very few, if any, of which would reduce the paperwork that small businesses have to go through. Steve Koprinz has a new book out, The Small Business Guide to Government Contracts. And one of the first things Steve says in there is, you might think that small businesses would have an easier time. They actually have a harder time because there's more compliance rules for small business than there is for large business.
Well, and that's an interesting point, and you're absolutely right. I was talking to a company just the other day that happens to be an 8A contractor, and they were asking me what the point-by-point processes were for an agency to commit a contract to an 8A company. And it gave me the opportunity, Mark, to revisit the acquisition rules for 8A contracting. You know, it's a very circuitous process. It's not just that the end-use customer and the 8A contractor can agree to do business together. No, the Small Business Administration needs to get in the middle of that transaction. And when they get in the middle of their transaction, there are seven or eight things that either the Small Business Administration or the small 8A company have to do in terms of paperwork and process before you can even get to the happy handshake that where you have an agreement and money changes hands.
Right. So it's an impediment to the process, especially if an agency needs something in, let's call it, an expeditious manner.
In an expeditious manner, but also the 8A program in particular was set up with the idea to help small disadvantaged businesses get themselves established and get in good working order. And yet the rules and regulations that surround this program really act as a barrier to market entry in many cases for an 8A. In some cases, unless you've totally mastered the 8A process, you're probably just better off being a small business on a GSA schedule.
So you know, I don't know. There's no easy answers. But you're going to the Hill and you're going to solve this.
That's right. I'd be happy to tell Congress what rules and regulations they need to do away with.
Okay. Tied into all of this stuff, we have all of this money laying around, weird legislation coming down the pike. Another story that I pulled out of WashTech opens another can of worms that we have discussed before, and it's the Navy employing a five-year agreement on auction services with FedBid. But, you know, the thing I think that caught both of our eyes here is that somebody said that there are 50,000 qualified sellers who are eligible for this, including thousands of veteran-owned and service-disabled veteran-owned small businesses. A lot of lip service, but excuse me, you know, who's vetted these? What's wrong with this picture?
Well, there are lots of things that are wrong with this picture, Mark, and that's a good place to start. Even if you look at the GSA Schedules program, the biggest estimate I've seen is that there are 19,000 companies on schedule, and while 75 to 80% of those businesses are small, not all of them are, still that's less than half of the 50,000 qualified sellers, rather, that FedBid is alluding to here in terms of the deal they just signed with the Navy. And it brings on all kinds of questions. Where do you get that $50,000 or 50,000 entity number? And you can't just wake up one morning and decide that you're going to call yourself a service-disabled, veteran-owned small business. There's a process that you have to go through in order to be certified.
It's not a self-certification.
No, it's not a self-certification. There are, in fact, a couple of processes depending on whose agency you're doing business with. So, you know, right away, I don't know where they're getting the 50,000 company number from. That makes me very suspicious that it was just something that was hung up there. And if I were the Navy, I would be very concerned in turn about whether any bids I was getting through this system were from companies that were properly vetted and selling me legitimate solutions.
Right. And you know, it also begs the question that companies have been pre-vetted through GSA schedules. The schedules offer pretty much anything you could need, and the Navy also has other vehicles.
Right, and that's exactly right. GSA, for its part, has already assured the responsiveness and the responsibility of any company that holds its GSA schedule contract. Similarly, the Navy, particularly for things like IT and some IT-related services, has a huge contract of its own called C4D. So the Navy for C4D has vetted the responsibility and responsiveness of the contractors on C4D. On both of those programs, Mark, whether it's C4D or the GSA schedules, it's not just the companies that have been deemed responsible. It's that the prices that those companies offer have been deemed to be fair and reasonable by a certified government contracting officer. So I'm not sure that any of this is coming into play with the agreement that FedBid signed with the Navy. Again, if I were Navy acquisition officials, I would be asking, okay, where are these companies coming from? Who are they? How have they been vetted to make sure that they're responsible firms? How have they been vetted in terms of price reasonableness? Because I, as the Navy, I have procurement rules I have to follow. And they're not just procurement rules on making sure I have good competition, and making sure that I'm doing business with responsible companies. There are rules that I have to follow, like, oh, well, are the items I'm buying covered by a mandatory source supplier like Ability One? So right away, am I going to be getting something from a private sector supplier that I should be getting from the Ability One program by statute? That's a question that needs to be answered. The other is, how am I making sure that the items I'm getting meet either the Buy American Act or Trade Agreements Act, depending on what I'm buying and how much of it I'm buying at a given time? These are questions that need to be answered, and they're questions that ultimately need to be answered by the buyer. My concern among many with an operation like FedBid is that federal customers tend to think that the buyer, the supplier, is providing them with a turnkey solution that meets all the government's procurement rules, and I just don't know that that's the case here.
Exactly. You're listening to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, back after these messages.
Giving you the edge on healthy living, here's Mayo Clinic Medical Edge. If you've ever had poison ivy, you know it can drive you crazy. A small outbreak of the red itchy rash can be treated with over-the-counter steroid creams, but Mayo Clinic dermatologist Dr. Marion McAvoy still suggests a visit to the doctor. Why?
Often what happens is you end up broken out in areas other than the area that was initially exposed.
When a generalized reaction like that happens, the treatment often turns to oral steroidal medications such as prednisone.
And we usually use that for 2 to 3 weeks because oftentimes that poison ivy reaction persists, and if you're just treated for a very short period of time, we will often see rebounds.
Of course, the best treatment is prevention, so know what poison ivy and its cousins, poison oak and poison sumac, look like. That way, you can at least avoid direct contact with the plant. For more information, talk to your doctor or visit mayoclinic.org. I'm Vivian Williams.
This week on Agency of the Month, Kathy Hudson, Director of Human Resources at the National Security Agency, said,
"We have a slogan in HR, which is, if you can keep an employee for 5 years, you can keep them for a career. But we, like the rest of the federal government, are watching all of our data and doing a lot of workforce planning, strategic workforce outlook and analysis of what are the trends that we're seeing."
Agency of the Month, Wednesday mornings at 11 a.m. in June. Sage Management is a leader in finding solutions to national security challenges within federal and state government. Being a small, veteran-owned business, the leaders at Sage Management understand the importance of offering professional, streamlined services quickly and effectively. Their mission is to apply sound business management practices, proven engineering solutions, and community expertise in all aspects of national security. To find out more about Sage Management and career opportunities, visit sage-mgt.net.
Central Michigan University has 7 centers right here in Metro D.C. Surprised? CMU has been educating Metro D.C. professionals since 1975, offering accredited adult-friendly degree programs designed for working professionals.
I feel so much better prepared now that I have this degree, and I feel that there is nothing that I cannot tackle.
Stay competitive with a quality degree from Central Michigan University in Metro D.C. Choose from degrees applicable to careers in administration, public sector leadership, healthcare, human resources, and more. Classes are forming now at our 7 Metro DC centers, including our new Alexandria Center. Go to cmich.edu/metrodc. That's cmich.edu/metrodc for more information. Or call 877-679-1268. Central Michigan University in Metro DC. Quality degrees, convenient formats, 7 local centers, certified operate by Chev.
This is Lisa Millman from AFMA. For over 133 years, AFMA has proudly served the U.S. Armed Forces community. We're more than just great life insurance for the military family. We're your guide through life's challenges by offering the right products at the right time for the best price. Our Survivor Assistance Services team provides compassionate and caring advice and assistance for your family at a most critical time. At AFMA, we understand the many challenges that military families can face during their service and after the loss of a loved one. As a nonprofit membership association, AFMA always focuses on what's best for you. That means offering the best prices on life insurance for all military personnel and the best services for survivors. And it also means offering policies with no war or aviation clauses. For a free life insurance quote, call a membership coordinator at 1-877-398-2263 or visit us online at AFMA.com. That's AAFMAA.com.
For those dedicated to outstanding public service, meeting the expectations of the American people in an increasingly complex world is a challenge. But with smart programs, people, and performance management, government employees are the epicenter of positive change. The Performance Institute presents the 12th Annual Government Performance Summit, June 18th through 20th at the Marriott at Metro Center. Learn how to create the future for government leadership, measurement, and a motivated workforce. Space is limited. Register now at governmentperformance.org.
This is Mark Amtower. I've been advising contractors for almost 30 years, and when they need agency contacts, I always recommend Carroll's GovSearch. With over 350,000 contact listings and over 1,000 government organization charts, they help you find the people you need to reach in all levels of government. Give them a try. Get a free organization chart and a sample listing from their database. Contact Gordon Peel at 703-757-8228. Carroll Publishing, bringing government to you like no other.
Welcome back to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest today is Larry Allen. You can find Larry at allenfederal.com. Go there, sign up for the newsletter. The week ahead is well worth 5 minutes of your time every week if it takes you that long to read. It's only 2 pages if you print it out, and I do because I like the hard copy. It's like it's being delivered to my mailbox. There you go. Larry, I've noticed recently that you have been a little more active in your use of social media. So what are your preference when it comes to the social media universe right now?
Well, I'm using LinkedIn a lot more than I ever used to, Mark. There are some very good user groups, one of which you certainly host, that cover the federal contracting space, and they're very good forums for discussion. I find them interesting because it's interesting to see what people do know and what people don't know.
There's a lot of weird answers. There's a lot of good answers.
Right. And there's a little bit of everything, but it's always good to know. And it's always good to know who's in the marketplace, no matter what their viewpoint. These are people that are in your arena, and you need to understand what they're thinking and where they're coming from, because somebody somewhere might be listening to what they're actually saying. And that can definitely have an effect on buying activities and future rules and regulations, things of that nature. So I find also it's not just Allen Federal that's making more use of social media. I think government contractors now, whilst maybe certainly not new to the use of social media, Mark, are using it much more as in an integrated way into their overall federal marketing campaigns. I'm working on some other things outside of this where you see companies that are seeking acknowledgement that their social media plans are actually dynamic, diverse, worthy of attention, in some cases worthy of award, perhaps. It's really become part and parcel of how you as a government contractor work in the federal marketplace. And what we've been talking a little bit about here over this past hour is some of the ways that traditional interactions between contractors and government types are under fire. We talked about the GSA Expo, for example, where there was hardly any government people there, and the people that were there had gotten very stern ethics lectures. That has the net impact of diminishing what should be normal business-to-business communication.
Almost felt like you were in a church service.
Right, right. And so what needs to replace that? Well, social media is the place that a lot of people are going to replace what had been more of a traditional communication, because the need to have the communication interaction is still very much alive.
It is, and that leads me to the last part of your newsletter. You and a couple other people have put together a tremendous new event. We're very much of the mind together that venues where feds and contractors can interact are they're the lifeblood of this market.
Well, right, and interaction needs to happen in the federal marketplace, Mark, just as it does in the commercial marketplace. And one of the concerns I have is that with highly publicized media circuses like the GSA Public Building Service fiasco from this past March, even some of the things that are from a fallout from the Secret Service South American escapades, even though that didn't have much, if any, contractor involvement. All of those types of things always get an overreaction from overseers and others, whether they're executive or legislative branch overseers. And the net impact is a diminishment of the types of good common sense discussions that need to be had. You don't want to be a buyer, for example, and not be up on the most recent trends of the marketplace in which you're seeking to spend the government's money. So in technology, you want to have some passing knowledge of what's going on in the technology market. That's why conferences like the ones that you have, Mark, and the one that I'm putting on, which is the Magic Conference coming up at the end of July in Arlington, are important. They're important because the government can come and do two things. First, they certainly come and talk about what their programs are doing, which is important for contractors who are either on those programs or who might like to be on those programs. But the second thing, and not always as obvious, is that the government participants can learn a lot from what industry leaders have to say as well. In fact, talking about this conference that's coming up at the end of July, I was on the phone just yesterday with a major government buyer for the Air Force who wants very badly to send a few people to listen. They're not necessarily coming to speak. They just want to come and listen to what other people have to say. So that underscores the relative importance of maintaining open forums for what should be reasonable business-to-government communication. In the end, preserving those channels, Mark, really only helps the buyer, the federal buyer, be smarter and a better steward of federal funds.
Yeah, and so go to allenfederal.com. You'll find the link there, or you can go to magicgov.org and sign up there. The lineup looks great. Same thing with our Government Market Master program in conjunction with Capital College. We're using GovEvents as our registration portal. So go to govevents.com, look up Government Market Master, and you'll see the courses we have for June. By the time this show airs, we will probably have some of our July sessions up as well. And one of them, Larry, is on social media, LinkedIn for government contractors. I'm with you on that. You know, I all of the contractors are here. And what's amazing is every time I run a federal agency count, there's thousands of people from federal agencies, all federal agencies on LinkedIn, if the body count is there. Yes. Nuclear Regulatory Commission does not have thousands of people, but they've got some very key folks. So, Larry, thank you so much. Again, you can find Larry at allenfederal.com. This isn't my day job. If you need to ensure that your federal marketing program is paying major dividends, give me a call. You can find me all over LinkedIn, or you can find me at federaldirect.net. And thank you very much for listening to AmTower Off-Center.
You've been listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. AmTower Off-Center, Monday afternoons at noon, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.
Federal News Radio is on Twitter. Follow us at Fed News Radio as news breaks and develops throughout the day. At Fed News Radio, your source for federal news now.